Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With Tom Petty died, I had to go.
You were shaken by that one.
I was working here. I went upstairs to my office. It was one of the ones I had to recuse myself because I don't like to cry in front of the family. And so I had to go upstairs and be alone. I went to the Tom Petty concert, and we were there, and my buddy Matsy was with me. Have I told you this story before on the air?
No.
We were there. And I don't know. I was unloading trucks at the time, and I don't know why I still got up in the morning and went and unloaded trucks. A job I had no problem calling off from because I was young and stupid. And for whatever reason, I'm like, no, I'm going to toughen out. I'm going to work this day. It's dumb. Hungover as hell. Terrible day. Either way, was there that night. We're in the bathroom. And I'm standing there, and I'm going to the bathroom. And, you know, you need to go in number one. I'm next to my buddy, Matsy. And there's this other guy next to him, and this woman like pops her head in and is like said some guy's name, and they're like, hey, oh, it's a men's room. Oh, hey, oh, men's room. And they're like, she pops out, and someone's like, there's a woman in here? I got to clean up the language a little bit. And basically, there's a term for this, but I'm not going to say it because we'll get thrown off the air. But there was the you ever see Brewster's Millions where, yes, she sure wasn't ugly. Like, it went down to that, and this guy all of a sudden goes, that's my wife. And I go, zip it up right now. Betsy. And these dudes, I mean, right behind us in this bathroom at Blossom, haymaker after haymaker, oh, and we are, like, covering up as we're going to go, there's a fight at the Tom Petty concert of all places. My God.
Yeah, just enjoy the music. Come on. It's a legend.
We go out there. The cops come running in. They're like doing like the, they got the night, they're holding the nightstick, getting ready to bring the nightstick out. Like, it was bad. And you just hear guys getting it in the bathroom.
Big boss man.
You're ever in Summit County, Ohio, you better respect the law and order and don't be getting in fights in the men's room. All over this one, he just had to defend his wife's honor. I mean, I don't blame the guy. Shouldn't have said what they had said. I had a better feeling about that fight than I do the Cavs game tonight because all you guys.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. How you like that? I'll take, you know what? Here's Luke in Elyria. He's going to get you ready for a playoff game. Hello, Luke.
How are you guys doing today?
Wonderful, Luke. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Listen, I think trade Darius Garland for John Morant straight up. Who says no?
All right.
Yeah, there you go. We're ready for Cavs basketball.
That's what you're thinking?
We're ready for Cavs basketball.
On day game
if
number
Owen was
three.
Here, we'd be playing Tonight's the Night. Nobody knows how to find it without Owen. Again, after another legendary rocker, we'd be playing Cavs basketball. Here we are. Yeah, you guys are ready for game three.
How about we – I got a trade for you. How about
General
we,
Manager Andrew Berry of the Browns. He joins us at 9:15.
How about we trade the Darius Garland that can't play for the Darius Garland – that will play tonight, because it will mean the world of a difference in this series if they get him back.
Please, dear God.
They are better than the Pacers. The Pacers have somehow been turned into... You know how I listen to these national...
I have a bad feeling because you guys have a bad
feeling. Kenny, you know how I listen to these national podcasts, and I'm hearing guys go...
You listen to too many of them.
Man, whoa, Indiana, better than we thought. No, they're not. The Cavs are injured. It's the only reason they're down two games to nothing in the series. Can we just be honest for 2 seconds? Yes, it was a meltdown, and there were a lot of mistakes that the Cavs made at the end of that game, but they coughed it up. The Pacers did not claim it.
Yeah.
It got coughed up.
How can
anybody watch it and say otherwise?
I really wish people were with you on this. I mean, this is the last gasp, guys. And I ain't going to lie to you. Like, I know, and I said this a couple days ago, and I meant it a couple days ago. I got a lot of folks out there. The Cavs are, maybe it's because my dad would walk by in the living room, and my dad never liked basketball, and he thought I was wasting my time. I've had a more special spot in my heart for the Cavs than I've had just about anybody else. And that's a surprising thing, because I know I'm Mr. Football, for talking football all the time. And I get all these accusations. Hey, well, the only reason I never talk Cavs is because of Lima. Lima picks everything we talk about. Okay? I want to talk about the Cavs. If you think I'd rather sit here and watch the Cavs lose and then sit there and talk about what Shador Sanders had for breakfast, or whether or not he's being nice to Dylan Gabriel, or whether or not Joe Flacco's actually looking for real estate in Northeast Ohio, or any of that other stuff that we get into, I mean, you're crazy. You are absolutely nuts, and you don't know me. I am nervous. I don't want them to lose. I want them to win. I want them to go further, because I don't want to find ourselves talking about some of the very nasty things we could talk about if they lose. If they go and they play the Celtics after this and they lose, I'll deal with it. But, man, they lose this series. I brought this up on Tuesday, and I'm right about it, and I know I'm – or Wednesday, and I know I'm right about it, is that we'll get more Luke and Illyrius. We will get more of those calls.
Oh, obviously, yes.
We will get more craziness out of it. So that's where we're at, man, okay, personally and professionally, because this is year three with this same nucleus. And I can only say that they're injured for so long, and I can only say it so much. Let me get to Mark and Wycliffe real quick. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. So morning. We're talking about the importance of getting Garland back on this floor. I bet the Pacers would love to see Garland on that floor. The way Kenny's talking about how physical this series has been, I'm afraid Garland's not going to make it.
Lima, your thoughts?
Well, what do you mean? Are you saying, Mark, that a banged up Garland they would love to see? Because that I would agree with you. Are you saying the healthy, almost all healthy NBA Darius Garland from this year?
Yes, now, even healthy. I mean, he might get you 18 and a half, 21 points, but on the defensive end, they're going to eat him alive.
That's actually a fair point. I know I want to get mad at you. No, I know I want to get mad at you, Mark, but that's actually a fair point.
Yeah,
that's part
is,
of the reason I would hold
Kenny,
him out if I were Kenny Atkinson in these first two games.
That,
thank you for the call.
Unfortunately, they've been eating alive a lot of the guys that are trying to defend, notably Ty Jerome, who obviously is a zero on offense right now, but he has no shot on defense. Halliburton, when he had the ball at the end of that game, that job of putting that ball down on the floor like a yo-yo and picking his angle, how he was going to go one-on-one against Halliburton, he was messing with him. He was playing with him. He knew there was nothing that Jerome, once he got him off balance, then it was step back time, and that was a practice shot with the game on the line. What I mean by that is at no point was there a threat that shot was going to be contested.
And to talk about Browns rookie minicamp and everything during the offseason and what's to come in 2025. We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We welcome in Browns General Manager Andrew Berry. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Lima, I'm excited for rookie minicamp too, and I love Harold Fannin too, so we got something in common.
Young kids too, right? So come on.
How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing wonderful. We hope you're very, very well, Andrew. Tone, you go ahead and lead it off.
I did want to say, Andrew, next time you hear some random sports talk show host as you're driving around speculating on a QB going number two overall who ends up going in the fifth round, can maybe you tip us off next time, make us feel a little smarter? We're trying to educate our fans, Andrew, and they don't feel very educated now.
You know what? The draft always comes with surprises and some unexpected twists and turns. But we're excited to have the group that we have coming to Berea today.
Andrew Berry joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So how difficult was that to keep that under wraps? Because we find out later on, it's like, hey man, like 2 weeks they were working on that trade, and I'm like, hey, I can just about promise that Andrew would keep it close to the vest and not tell anybody. But I don't know if you can trust anybody in Jacksonville not to tell anybody. I mean, goodness gracious, the owner is a wrestling promoter, for crying out loud. So was that a little bit, I mean, how long were those 2 weeks, allegedly, how long was those 2 weeks for you personally before the trade was actually consummated?
Yeah, I think there's, so maybe I should start by saying, like, you know, it's kind of the first time I've really dealt with James Gladstone, and he was fantastic to deal with on the trade. You know, James and I, we really didn't know each other well, but we met at the combine and then obviously worked on the deal together. You know, I'd say this, that, you know, anytime maybe you're doing business with someone for the first time, there's always maybe a little bit in the back of your mind of like, okay, are we solid on this? Is this gonna, you know, is this gonna stay quiet as appropriate? And you don't really know. But at the same time, I think, you know, they had every incentive to keep it tight as well, because they were making a major move up the board. And, you know, what I've learned is like, they're really good people over there. And, you know, I was happy we were able to bring it to fruition.
And what's interesting is there's some audio that just surfaced in video from the Giants with their GM, Joe Shane, basically saying he knew about all this. He didn't know necessarily which team that you were talking to, but he said he knew the Browns weren't going to take Travis Hunter at number two overall. And what I always find interesting, like in the NBA, you know, a counterpart would be like Nico Harrison, right? Mavs GM, who did not really hold an auction for Luka. You're sitting there with the number two pick, but there's only so many teams that might have the assets that you might be truly looking for. So can you really even have an auction to let everybody know this pick is for sale?
No, it's a really good point. Like, you know, one of the reasons we really use the month of April, and really probably late March and April, to kind of canvas the league. Like, you know, it's unrealistic. Like, you're not gonna get some, or it's unlikely for you to get a deal for some team like moving 30-2, that type of thing. But, you know, generally speaking, you'll make calls, you know, within the top half of the round, whether there's interest in moving up, or if you do make a small move, would you make another move back? You know, as well as teams that you know, maybe are picking, you know, picking around your slot at 33. So like, you do get a fair amount of intel. Like, you won't necessarily like auction off the pick. It's not like you go and say, hey, look, we're absolutely not picking a player here. We just, you know, we want to sell the pick to the highest bidder. But you do get a sense of like, hey, is there a willingness for teams to move up and show that you have flexibility in terms of how you'll use the asset.
All right. Do you, and maybe you could share with me some honesty, as honest as you can be, because I know how I would be if I was a GM, which is probably why I could not be one. Some part of you have to root against Travis Hunter the rest of his career.
No, Travis is like, he's an awesome player. He's an even better human being. Like, I think he's going to have a nice long career and do well in Jacksonville. You know, but the reality of it is like, you know, our charge is team building, and you know, there's more than one good player in the draft. You know, that's the other piece of it. And for us to be able to move down three spots, you know, get another top 35 pick and then a future one, in addition to selecting, you know, one of the best players in the draft, you know, we felt really good about it. That mix of who we end up selecting or how we use those resources will be better for our team in the long run.
Andrew Berry joining us on the show. I know it's not the same in your world, but in our world, I mean, you have a situation where the number 144th pick is more popular than the number 5 overall pick. How do you guys go about balancing everything during rookie minicamp and then going into training camp, where you have Shedeur Sanders, who fell to the 5th round and certainly has a tremendous fan base behind him?
Yeah, I think that's like less of an issue for us internally. I know it leads to a lot of conversation and interest, you know, in the media and externally, and understandably so. But for us, we always talk about tuning out the external noise, because that doesn't really matter in terms of how we work, how we prepare. And in terms of Shedeur, like, you know, his big thing is making the team and earning a role. You know, that's all rookies have to focus on doing that. It's making the team first and then earning a role. And, you know, listening to the outside noise does nothing to help accomplish those.
What does the organization want to challenge him specifically with?
Yeah, I'd say it's less about challenging him specifically and more about our rookies in general. Like, they've all got to come up the learning curve quickly. You know, they're learning a new system, they're in a new environment. You know, they're learning new skills, you know, kind of on the job. And, you know, Kevin's message to them last night during the first team meeting was, hey, your focus is, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but it's to make the team. Nobody here has made the team yet, so it's making the team. And then after that, it's earning a role. And that's the same thing for Shedeur.
Andrew Berry joining us on the show. You got four active guys in that quarterback room. Does it make the rookie camp that much more important for he and Dylan Gabriel to take advantage of all the reps that they get?
I think that because we have two quarterbacks, two rookie quarterbacks, we are structuring it a little bit differently. Because we do want them to get a greater volume of reps than we typically do in a rookie mini camp. But I think it's probably less about rookie mini camp and more about taking advantage of opportunities really over the next, call it 4 months. And Kevin and Tommy and the offensive staff, they have a really good plan around that. I mean, and that's probably even before we were in the world where we had drafted two quarterbacks. We had all, we've typically taken four quarterbacks into camp. Now the rep distribution had always been maybe a little bit different because, we had a clear or at least entrenched starter. And so this year obviously is a little bit different, but I think they've done a really nice job of designing the offseason programming and, I think the plans that we have for training camp in the preseason, there will be plenty of reps to evaluate all four of those passers.
Andrew Berry with us right now on the hotline, GM of the Cleveland Browns. Every year now, there seems to be a fair share of like controversial players in a draft for whatever reason. But what's interesting about Shador is everybody kept talking about what a great kid he truly was and how his ability to process was something that was fantastic. But yet, as we get closer to the draft and after the combine, it seemed like there was some character assassination stuff that comes out. Do the GMs need to get together? I don't know if it's the owners' meetings or what, need to get together and say, can we stop leaking things that are negative about these guys? I know there's certainly gamesmanship that goes on, but it just seems unfortunate, the stuff that's been said about Shador and some of his meetings with specific teams.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I would be surprised if most of that comes from general managers in the league. I think, there are so many touch points throughout the process, whether it's agents, media, front office staff, assistant coaches, you name it. So it could really, things like that can come from anywhere. But I don't think it's certainly not unique to Shador. It's not unique to even rookie players. Like, we see that all the time with vets and honestly, even like non-player employees. Like, you hear it with coaches, you hear it with executives. So like, I think that's just kind of part of our business. And as Peter always says, it's a little bit like life in the big city. Now, that being said, like I personally hate the character assassinations with, a lot of these kids coming out, where we just kind of like, publicly just pick them apart, because you're right. Like, oftentimes it's smoke or it's someone acting in self-interest, and, it's not really fair to the kids. But at the same time, it's unfortunately probably something that every athlete is going to have to deal with at some point in their career.
We've had plenty of adversity over the years, but you seem to be pretty unbothered when there are any of these steep challenges. But does it surprise you or annoy you at all that there seems to be an undercurrent in NFL media and fans that actually thinks it was the owner and not you that made the Shador pick? Is it insulting?
No, I don't really pay any attention to any of that. I mean, we're super excited to have him. We spent a lot of time with him in the process. He's a good kid. He's talented. We were surprised that he was available at 144, and we're excited to have him to the room. But he's got to compete and earn a role, just like Dylan, just like Kenny, just like Joe. And so we're excited to see that competition because we do have a number of players in that room that we have a level of belief in. So that's really my focus. I don't really care about the narrative stuff, to be honest with you.
Andrew Berry with us on the show. What is Joe Flacco's role now with two rookies on this roster?
To take advantage of the reps that he gets and compete for the job. Like, it doesn't really change. Like, look, we will have we have a number of professional individuals in that room, and they'll get along well. They'll work together. But Joe's job also isn't to bring along rookies. We have a very experienced and good coaching staff. That's their job. Joe's job is to compete and earn a role, just like the others in the room.
Do you think Joe Flacco even really needs reps, though? If it is a competition, but he picked up the offense pretty quick and seamlessly the last time around, that led to a playoff run.
Yeah, Joe's played. It's a fair question. Joe's played a lot of football. I think every quarterback would tell you they like the reps, but I think it's probably a fair observation that
Joe probably needs a little bit. Well, honestly, just Joe needs a lot less time on task, maybe relative to the younger players in that, you know, in that room, because he is so experienced and so seasoned. You know, he's seen a lot of football, played a lot of football.
Andrew Berry with us on the show. So you're the current general manager, so I have to ask you this question, even though this has been going on since you and I were in high school. I have seen this football team try to balance winning with evaluating a young quarterback based on the need for possibly a future quarterback many times, and it has failed many times. What makes you guys different? How do you plan on going about the balance of winning football games, making things better for the future, but also evaluating two young guys who one or possibly both could end up on your active roster week one?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know what was done in the past, and honestly, I really don't care. We're really focused on the present. And I think, you know, honestly, like, I understand the question. I understand that everybody wants to, like, fast forward 4 or 5 months just because it's interesting. But, you know, our focus is really on development this spring, and like figuring out like, hey, who's going to be on the team and what roles they're gonna play, and then we'll go from there.
When there is a free agent available coming off surgery and you have some interest, is it protocol for you to work them out?
Not necessarily. It depends on the injury. It also usually teams are pretty good about sharing, with the player's consent, sharing medical information. So it depends on the injury. It depends on where they are in their recovery. It's maybe a little bit case dependent. That's the best way to answer it.
Well, I was then going to ask the follow up. Did you work out Nick Chubb?
Oh, I got you. No, we.
Sorry about that.
No worries. So yeah, Nick, with his foot injury, he's recovered from that. That's not something it's not like last year where, you know, he had a borderline catastrophic knee injury, and he was still recovering and working his way back. Like, in the grand scheme of major injuries, like, I guess there's no such thing as truly a minor injury or a minor, you know, break, but his foot is fine.
Have you talked to Nick Chubb recently?
Certainly kept in contact with him and his reps, leading into the draft. So depending on what you say recently, yes, but, you know, we haven't really necessarily been in strong communication after the draft.
So you can't rule anything out with him coming back?
I wouldn't rule anything out, but I would say that it's probably increasingly unlikely. Like, we do have, two young guys that we liked. We think Jerome plays a role, and it's just it's basically kind of maybe seeing how the roles shake out and, you know, in the running back room. Look, you're never going to rule out someone, as near and dear to our heart as Nick. And I would expect him to take another step, you know, being a year removed from the knee injury. But I'd say it's maybe a return is less likely, at least in the short term, with us right now.
So just on a human level, and you understand, you talk to fans probably anytime you go out or go to the grocery store or interact with anybody from Northeast Ohio, he is one of the treasured assets, treasured athletes in the history of this city. So how do you balance the business of doing what you have to do for the betterment of the football team and then that emotional part of it, not to mention, yeah, you got guys in sales that probably would love to have Nick Chubb on the football team?
I guess the way I would say is, like, my job in decision-making is to be non-emotional. And then in terms of, you know, managing and treating people, it's to be able to do it as empathetically as possible. I think one of the hardest things is when you transition away from a player that meant a lot to the organization and meant a lot to the community. But, you know, the reality is, like, you know, look, I'd love for, key players in our organization to stay with us forever, play to their 45. Unfortunately, the sport doesn't allow that. That's part of, you know, the tough parts of the job, but it doesn't change how you view or treat or, you know, love the guys have come through as people.
Just kind of a inner working. I want to find out how draft night really works. And you talked about the Jacksonville trade, how long you worked on it. But what about the calls that just come in out of the blue on draft night? Is there a different kind of pressure for you to have to process that type of information, what kind of a deal they may be pitching. And then who are you running that by immediately? How many people even need to hear about that? And are there deals that just right off the bat you're saying, absolutely not, not even within the realm of possibility?
You know, it's funny. I actually got asked this question yesterday by our personnel operations director, Megan Rock. So I'll be honest, like a big part of April is the scenario planning and the trade planning, so that when you get to draft night, it's really more about just executing. I do have I view the draft room, it's almost like your cockpit, so to speak, or you know, maybe like the sideline operation with Kevin, where everybody who's in there has a role. You know, some of the roles they may field some trade calls, and then we have two people, Ken Kovash and Andrew Healy, who handle a lot of the trade pricing. So we actually have a screen in the draft room that you know shows the value of potential deals. So they're the primary people I lean on in that regard. There are definitely deals that come through that it's like, okay, like that's like a non-starter, whether it's the value of the deal or who's on the board. You know, and there are others that we think through a little bit more, a little bit more intently. But it's something that you know we've obviously made a lot of trades here, and we've made a lot of trades, you know, during the draft. So it's a pretty well-oiled machine, and we have a good group of people, a good group of minds with that.
Myles Garrett signed an extension with you guys. We know there was an up and down off season, a little touch and go with him. What's expected of him? Is there a challenge of more leadership with him as he goes on in his career, especially since you guys have so many more younger players than you've had in the past?
Yeah, I'd say that you don't need to have a C on your chest or necessarily be a veteran to be a leader. What's expected of Myles is to be a professional and to produce at a high level. Because of his standing in the league, he can have really strong influence, and you know, that is something that you know we will challenge Myles to do every year. But that burden doesn't just solely fall on his shoulders. His primary responsibility is to be a pro and produce at a high level.
Last one for me, Andrew. Ravens GM Eric DaCosta made some waves about a month ago, referencing that he actually uses mock drafts. They use it as a data point. And I'm just curious, you're trying to anticipate who could be available when it's the Browns' turn to pick. So how do you incorporate that? Is there a wisdom of crowds element of this that you can use to really aggregate all that's out there to try to anticipate who's going to be available?
Yeah, no, there is some of that, but it's probably not just, we'll use the betting markets in Vegas. We'll use the, mock drafts, usually with publishers who, may be getting their intel from, from team sources, because, not all mock drafts are created equal. And you may get like, a general sense of the market. Now, there comes a point in the draft where boards diverge pretty heavily, and that's usually probably early to mid third round. So you do have to take it with a grain of salt. But if you can aggregate some of the information, there can be a little bit of signal, in terms of how the market is viewing a player. It's not, it's not something that you just kind of buy hook, line, and sinker, but it is something that can be helpful when used appropriately.
Andrew, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you again here as training camp starts up in a bit. Enjoy rookie camp.
All right, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Andrew Berry, the Browns general manager, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So the Nick Chubb, obviously not so great news about that.
It's over. Yeah.
He said increasingly unlikely. He said increasingly unlikely. I don't want to say it's over. When Tom Petty died,
You were shaken by that one.
I was working here. I went upstairs to my office. It was one of the ones I had to recuse myself because I don't like to cry in front of the family. And so I had to go upstairs and be alone. I went to the Tom Petty concert, and we were there, and my buddy Matsy was with me. Have I told you this story before in the air?
No.
We were there. And I don't know, I was unloading trucks at the time, and I don't know why I still got up in the morning and went and unloaded trucks. A job I had no problem calling off from because I was young and stupid. And for whatever reason, I'm going to tough it out. I'm going to work this day. It's dumb. Hungover as hell. Terrible day. Either way, was there that night. We're in the bathroom. And I'm standing there, and I'm going to the bathroom. And you're going number one. I'm next to my buddy, Matsy. And there's this other guy next to him, and this woman like pops her head in and is like said some guy's name and they're like, hey, oh, it's a men's room. Oh, hey, oh, men's room. And they're like, she pops out and someone's like, there's a woman in here. I got to clean up the language a little bit. And basically, there's a term for this, but I'm not going to say it because we'll get thrown off the air. But there was the, you ever see Brewster's Millions where, yes, she sure wasn't ugly. Like, it went down to that, and this guy all of a sudden goes, that's my wife. And I go, zip it up right now. Betsy. And these dudes, I mean, right behind us in this bathroom at Blossom, haymaker after haymaker, oh, and we are like covering up as yes, we're going to go. There's a fight at the Tom Petty concert of all places. My God.
Yeah, just enjoy the music. Come on. It's a legend.
We go out there. The cops come running in. They're like doing like the, they got the night, they're holding the nightstick, getting ready to bring the nightstick out. Like it was bad. And you just hear guys getting it in the bathroom.
Big boss man.
You're ever in Summit County, Ohio, you better respect the law and order and don't be getting in fights in the men's room. All over this one, he just had to defend his wife's honor. I mean, I don't blame the guy. Shouldn't have said what they had said. I had a better feeling about that fight than I do the Cavs game tonight because all you guys.
Oh, come on.
Yep, there you go. There you go. How you like that? I'll take, you know what? Here's Luke in Elyria. He's going to get you ready for a playoff game. Hello, Luke.
How are you guys doing today?
Wonderful, Luke. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Listen, I think trade Darius Garland for John Morant straight up. Who says no?
All right.
Yeah, there you go. We're ready for Cavs basketball.
That's what you're thinking?
We're ready for Cavs basketball.
On day game number three.
If Owen was here, we'd be playing Tonight's the Night. Nobody knows how to find it without Owen. Again, after another legendary rocker, we'd be playing Cavs basketball. Here we are. Yeah, you guys are ready for game three.
How about we – I got a trade for you. How about
General
we,
Manager Andrew Berry of the Browns. He joins us at 9:15.
How about we trade the Darius Garland that can't play for the Darius Garland – that will play tonight, because it will mean the world of a difference in this series if they get him back.
Please, dear God.
They are better than the Pacers. The Pacers have somehow been turned into... You know how I listen to these national...
A bad feeling, because you guys have a bad
Kenny,
feeling.
You know how I listen to these national podcasts, and I'm hearing guys go...
You listen to too many of them.
Man, whoa, Indiana, better than we thought. No, they're not. The Cavs are injured. The Cavs are injured. It's the only reason they're down 2-0 in the series. Can we just be honest for 2 seconds? Yes, it was a meltdown, and there were a lot of mistakes that the Cavs made at the end of that game, but they coughed it up. The Pacers did not claim it.
Yeah.
It got coughed up.
How can
anybody watch it and say otherwise?
I really wish. I really wish people were with you on this. I mean, this is the last gasp, guys, and I ain't going to lie to you. Like, I know, and I said this a couple days ago, and I meant it a couple days ago. I got a lot of folks out there. The Cavs are... Maybe it's because my dad would walk by in the living room and my dad never liked basketball and he thought I was wasting my time. I've had a more special spot in my heart for the Cavs than I've had just about anybody else. And that's a surprising thing because I know I'm Mr. Football for talking football all the time. And I get all these accusations. Hey, well, the only reason I never talk Cavs because of Lima. Lima picks everything we talk about. Okay? I want to talk about the Cavs. If you think I'd rather sit here and watch the Cavs lose and then sit there and talk about what Shedeur Sanders had for breakfast or whether or not he's being nice to Dylan Gabriel or whether or not Joe Flacco's actually looking for real estate in Northeast Ohio or any of that other stuff that we get into, I mean, you're crazy. You are absolutely nuts and you don't know me. I am nervous. I don't want them to lose. I want them to win. I want them to go further because I don't want to find ourselves talking about some of the very nasty things we could talk about if they lose. If they go and they play the Celtics after this and they lose, I'll deal with it. But, man, they lose this series. I brought this up on Tuesday, and I'm right about it, and I know I'm – or Wednesday, and I know I'm right about it, is that we'll get more Luke and Elyrias. We will get more of those calls.
Oh, obviously, yes.
We will get more craziness out of it. So that's where we're at, man, okay, personally and professionally, because this is year three with this same nucleus. And I can only say that they're injured for so long. And I can only say it so much. Let me get to Mark and Wycliffe real quick. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. So we're talking about the importance of getting Garland back on this floor. I bet the Pacers would love to see Garland on that floor. The way Kenny's talking about how physical – this series has been. I'm afraid Garland's not going to make it.
Lima, your thoughts.
Well, what do you mean? Are you saying, Mark, that a banged up Garland they would love to see? Because that I would agree with you. Are you, or are you saying the healthy, almost all healthy NBA Darius Garland from this year?
Yes, now, even healthy. I mean, he might get you 18 and a half, 21 points, but on the defensive end, they're going to eat him alive.
That's actually a fair point. I know I want to get mad at you. No, I know I want to get mad at you, Mark, but that's actually a fair point.
Yeah,
that's part of the reason I would hold him out if I were Kenny Atkinson in these first two games.
That,
thank you for the call.
Unfortunately, they've been eating alive a lot of the guys that are trying to defend, notably Ty Jerome, who obviously is a zero on offense right now, but he has no shot on defense. Halliburton, when he had the ball at the end of that game, that job of putting that ball down on the floor like a yo-yo and picking his angle, how he was going to go one-on-one against Halliburton, he was messing with him. He was playing with him. He knew there was nothing that Jerome, once he got him off balance, then it was step back time, and that was a practice shot with the game on the line. What I mean by that is at no point was there a threat that shot was going to be contested.